Families willing to fight for each other. Families willing to die for each other. Let's go, AU!
Chris Davis is going to drop back. War Eagle, this is War Bloggle with the War Bloggle podcast number 27. It has been an absolutely psycho crazy week in Auburn athletics, not just Auburn football. Yes, I did miss the last 2 weeks. I did a podcast after the Baylor win, said I was going to do one every week, and the world went absolutely psycho for about a week or two. Not much different than it has before, but obviously, you know, super psycho the last few weeks. So kind of just didn't podcast. It was also Ball State and South Alabama week, so not a thousand things to talk about. But Auburn is now 3-1 football wise and just came off the asterisk loss to Oklahoma. There's obviously been, this has been a national game. It was a big game. I mean, it was the ABC 230 game. A lot of teams were off. They, you know, it was, what were the other big ones? I can't even remember. I'm trying to think right now. Rack my brain. But it was not a huge week, so it was one of the biggest games of the week. I did say, oh yeah, Miami, Florida. That had a bigger rating somehow. I guess because it was Saturday night and whatever. But I guess the entire state of Florida was watching that. But the, at least in terms of ratings, Auburn, Oklahoma was number two for the weekend. So there's a thousand things to talk about with this. It's already been talked about ad nauseum because it's been a national story and it's gone on everywhere. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, you've got your nice little visual aid. So I'm showing you a picture right now of dude that hit on the sideline scoring. We could start from the beginning and I'm going to rant like crazy during this because the reaction has honestly been a little surprising in Auburn's favor. But then you have people that, you know, tough guys that whatever, but I'll get to that. So for years and years, I've had used the logical thought process that officiating does matter. Bad calls do matter. AP polls do matter. And all those things. And I've been laughed at, ridiculed, told I was weak, told I was just this, you know, loser, idiot, whatever. And now all of a sudden this year, the whole world hates the AP poll. They're picking it apart, telling you the exact reasons I've been telling you for the last 15 years of why it's stupid and makes no sense. Now they're telling you that officiating is bad, does matter, people need to be held accountable and all of that. So, you know, I'm just a big dumb idiot homer that's been screaming all the things that everybody's now screaming for the last 15 years. But let's start with the Auburn game. Auburn Oklahoma game. So, you know, you go into it, we've been told Mateer, their quarterback, is obviously the Heisman front runner. I guess because Arch Manning has sucked so far, we got to jump on somebody else. I watched some of their highlights from the Michigan game. I watched, you know, a little bit of who they play, Illinois State or whoever the first week that they kind of beat decently bad, not as bad as you'd think they would. And I'm okay. The guy's good. He's seems like a nice guy, a transfer from Washington State. But this, you know, they kind of loved on him on game day. Just he has been out of this world. And I'm like, who, where have you seen this out of this worldness? He does have this weird streak going back to last year. I mean, he's only played four games this year where he's had a throwing and running touchdown in all those games. That's cool. That's a big deal. You know, he's done that against Illinois State and whatever. And until the very end of the game against Auburn, he did not have a rushing touchdown. That's fine. But, you know, this propping up of somebody because we have nobody else to talk about. And I've tweeted this. It's bandwagon blind hype. There's no way all these people that are talking good things about him saying he was a Heisman candidate have watched his games or watched all these highlights. There are no like Johnny Manziel highlights. They keep saying, you know, when the play breaks down, he goes off. I haven't seen it. I saw him run like 70 yards against Temple, just a run up the middle or run around the edge, and that was it. It wasn't like he just ran around and flew around. But we just get so caught up in we need somebody to be outrageous or that dude is sick or whatever, just to say it, like just so we can have something to say. again, he seems like a cool guy. He was very respectful to Jackson Arnold. I saw his post game and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he broke his hand apparently on the first drive. Hope he gets back to normal. Like, not pulling against the guy at all. This is more about media coverage and media's need to, like, just create something. Like, just make it this huge thing. So it turned – Oklahoma went from, like, you know, they're decent. They're pretty good. But this leading up to the game when there were no other big games, we had – it all of a sudden turned into, I don't really like this for Auburn. I don't know. This is setting up to be a nightmare for Auburn. Like, going to Oklahoma is this tough deal? Y'all ever realize all those schools, other than Texas A&M now, I guess, all those schools out there, like Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Missouri, all those teams, that they just have tiny stadiums. I saw some guy going, yeah, Jackson Arnold ain't going to know what to do with 80,000. That's less than Auburn. I know Auburn Stadium is usually cheering for him, but like, I don't know. It's just the whole thing got propped up and built up as this massive deal. So it looked like Oklahoma was going to run away with the game. So I say all that to say now we get into the game. You got the home team. They're expecting a blowout. It's their biggest game of the season so far. Well, I don't know. Michigan there was decent, but Michigan's very mediocre. But big SEC game, first SEC game. So this massive deal. You know, we've got the Heisman candidate. We've heard somebody say we're a playoff team. We got the big show right here at our home. So all it took, how long did it take for that subconscious thought in the officials' minds to go that way? It took one drive. First drive, we have a catch, tuck, run two or three steps, roll over, do not hit the ground. You can look at your little, you know, kick six like screenshots where it looks like this from one view, but it's obviously not that view or not that way just because of the view. Y'all remember when people tried that, like Chris Davis stepped out of bounds, like that somebody had like looked at a view and it looked like his foot was out, but it was obviously like 3 feet in, that kind of thing. So he rolls over, Auburn picks it up, runs it back. They let it go. I was proud. I was surprised. Prized. That's a new word. I was surprised and proud that they let it go. They let us run it back. Oh, dang. Heisman candidate, home team, they're down. Oh, no. What's going to happen? Okay, well, let's review. You know they're going to review it. What are the words we always hear? Indisputable evidence. There was zero indisputable evidence. When Greg McElroy and whoever else it was calling the game, and every person on Twitter, not just dudes, guys who like live to write about football, when they say Auburn got screwed on the play, whether the call was right or not, let's forget that fact. Whether the call was right or not, it's supposed to be indisputable evidence. It was not indisputable in any way. You go with what's on the field. There was nothing that they could say, yeah, you know, there's his foot or his butt's obviously down before he has the ball. Or, you know, I can't say three steps. He fully, surely had the ball. Early in the game where Auburn can flip the script that has already been written against them, early in the game they could have flipped the script and turned it around and made it put Oklahoma in the hole and pressing. Because the reason fans get so loud and crazy at games like that is because they're nervous. They're scared. And that's why when an interception happens, an interception is the loudest scream you'll hear in any game. Why? Because the ball is in the air. You're scared. You're expecting it to be a touchdown pass. And then all of a sudden, the thing that you want to happen happens, and it is this massive sigh of relief scream. So, all that to say, if we keep that touchdown, then that puts them puts doubt in their head that they already had, or it brings it to the forefront because they're already scared. That's why they're going crazy. That is why they're screaming. They're trying to outdo the juju of their scaredness of this 3-0 SEC team, real SEC team. coming into their place. And they don't want Jackson Arnold to come in and make them look like idiots for hating him for the last year for some dumb reason. There was some nerd on Feinbaum on Friday. They let two Oklahoma student newspaper guys come up there. One has never touched a ball in his life, except maybe the mouse pad track ball. Never touched one in his life, and just destroying Jack because he had three interceptions last year. He had some fumbles. He had a lot of fumbles, but didn't lose all of them. But just destroy him. But either anyway, get off of that. So the referees decide that that play's too big for Auburn. That has to be what it is. It is a subconscious thought of these people are going to be really mad and it's going to ruin this party. I'm not saying that's like in anybody's brain and they're thinking that, but 1% subconscious, 1% subconscious, and this goes with basketball refs. I've talked about it a million times too. You see it with the way they call a charge or whatever. They are excited to make the home team excited. It's human nature. I'm not saying they have an agenda. I'm not saying they were paid to do anything wrong. But in the very back recesses of their mind, 1% of them wants to subconsciously make the home team happy or keep the party going. So they go against their own rules of indisputable evidence. Birmingham, the referees on the field, the head referee who's sitting there talking to him too, they go against their own rules and take away a touchdown to continue the party. Then Oklahoma goes down and kicks the field goal. So that is technically a 10-point swing. Auburn went from should have had 7, now we're down 3, 10 points. 10-point swing. Then later, I guess that was the second quarter. Yes, second quarter, they run the fake. The fake going off the field with the wide receiver play. If you're looking at YouTube, you can see that on the screen. The guy wide open. And this has been, again, this has been talked about ad nauseum. I'm just kind of trying to quickly go through these points so I can make my big point at the end. But he fakes going off the sideline. Auburn High School does this all the time, by the way. They did it again against Opelika last year. But it is an illegal play. You cannot fake. And people are like, oh, you're supposed to just watch how they're walking? Yes, that is part of the rule. You are being deceptive if it looks like you're going off the field and deceiving people with how you just kind of slow down or, you know, start walking like you're not, you know, locked into a play anymore. Yes, that is deceptive, and the rule says you cannot be deceptive. He goes and stands by the sideline. Let's not forget the fact that it showed DJ Durkin, and I think Hugh Freeze came in later, trying to call timeout because they saw the guy. I guess the booth saw the guy. They're trying to call timeout like crazy. And they are yelling timeout in his face, right next to his face, I guess. And then you see the ref after the play screaming at him, I can't call timeout there. You know, the ref that can never be wrong. Can never be wrong. Call timeout there. He won't call timeout. So it later comes out that Oklahoma says that they asked the refs about the play before the game. They told them that it was legal. SEC comes out after the game and says it is illegal. So we've got two wrongs there. Two very stupid wrongs. It should have been called anyway. Well, let's say three wrongs. There should have been a timeout that they didn't give them. It should have been called illegal, which would have been a 15-yard penalty. It would have been second and 40. I did the math the other day. Maybe second and 39, second and 49, something. It was already like second and 14 or something. So, yeah, second and 29 from like the 44. So they would have had to, pretty much score from the 44-yard line if they called the penalty. And then the officials obviously didn't know the rule. Or let's think about it this way. Oklahoma lied. They said there's going to be a play where we send a guy way over here and stand next to the sideline. That's probably what they did. Nobody said that yet. That's probably what they did. I'm giving the officials a little bit of benefit of the doubt here. They probably said, hey, we're going to send a guy that's going to stand right here on the sideline hash mark. But he's on the field. That's good, right? They're like, yeah, I mean, if he goes over there, that's good. They didn't tell him the part of, well, he's going to just stop running and just kind of walk off like he's going off the field. The deceptive part. So either Oklahoma lied or didn't tell the whole truth, or the officials heard the whole truth, the real thing, and told him, oh, yeah, that's good. You're good. yeah, man, you're good. With an official literally standing right there. There's a picture somewhere. I tweeted it the other day. I mean, a guy right there and, you know, oh, he pointed to the official and told him he was on the line or off the line or whatever. Okay? So he's still wrong. The official's wrong. So the official allowed you to do something wrong. There's no winning in this situation for Oklahoma. In fact, Venables, yesterday in his press conference was asked about it. He said, frankly, I'm just done talking about that. Oh, I wonder why. Why would you be done talking about that? Because you want to move on to your next game, which was who? Kent State. Oh, tough one. But you don't want to talk about it anymore because you have no way to win that situation. So, there are two rules there. That both of those rules were enforced, I guess you could say. The first one, there was absolutely no indisputable evidence. You use subjectivity and you use that 1% of the back part of your brain to keep the crowd happy. And then just flat out gave them a touchdown. And everybody's like, oh, well, they were scored anyway. No, they did not move the ball like crazy. They didn't. Sorry. Your Mr. Heisman candidate didn't run around and go crazy like everybody thought he would. He completed one long pass. And I'm not counting this one that they gave him. And we'll say, quote unquote, completed one long pass in a second. So that's two rules just not called correctly. Zero. So that gave Oklahoma at least, you know, let's assume they got a field goal on that play. Assume at least. So at 6 points they were given, seven taken away from Auburn. That's 13-point swing. But we gave them a touchdown on that play. So that's 10 points given, seven taken away from Auburn. So that's 17-point swing. 17-point swing. 17-point swing on the road in the SEC against the quote-unquote Heisman candidate, against playoff team. All that. 17 points. Remember that. 17 points. Later in the game, Auburn's driving. They throw a double pass to Cam. I believe it was Singleton the third. I'm pretty sure it was. And it was... I don't know that it was overthrown. Actually, it probably wasn't. He probably came in a little bit, but then had to jump up. So it really probably wasn't overthrown. The official, confused, surprised, doesn't know there's a play coming because he's watching the double pass, the first pass. He thinks Eric's going to run around the end. He's running away. Absolutely not looking at the play at all. You've seen it. We've seen it. You don't have to be told that again. Just running away from the play. The defender goes into... I can't let him score a touchdown here mode and just tackles him. It wasn't like he was trying to make a tough play on the ball or he just got, you know, his footing was wrong or he fell down. He literally said, I've got to not allow a touchdown here and then hopefully we can stop them after this penalty. They do that all the time. I mean, it's not the NFL. They're not putting the ball on the 1 yard line. I guess they ended up doing it. They're close, but. So he just flat out tackled him. Like, you ask that guy right now, he's going to say, yeah, I was beat. I didn't want to give up a touchdown on this play. I did the only thing I could to make him not score a touchdown, and that was tackle him. And the referee was out of position, did not expect to pass, was running away, and that's what happened. He did not see the tackle. The real issue, though, is that the 400 other referees on the field did not call anything either. Because they were thinking, oh, Buddy was back there 5 feet from the play. If he didn't call it, I'm not going to overturn him. Buddy wasn't looking. He wasn't there. He was not part of the field or play because he was not looking at anything on the field. The only thing he could have seen was a fade route in the back corner because that's where he was looking. So, again, this one's being written off because Auburn scored a few plays later on a play that was after pass interference on Auburn or uncatchable on Auburn. No, here's what happened. After that play, Auburn was forced with a 4th and 11 and converted it. Who's the best team? I'm not going to say all that yet. They converted a 4th and 11 after being wronged on that play. Who does a 4th and 11 on the road in that kind of crunch time needing a touchdown to take a lead? A good team. 4th and 11. Then they run it. They throw a pass to Cam Colbin. He's held after the play is after the pass is thrown. He is held up, meaning he can't go run anymore, or he's at least three steps behind where the ball would be. He can't go jump to where it was. So everybody's yelling, uncatchable. How in the world does a sane person have the audacity to watch Cam Colbin get tackled the play before or a few plays before and then scream uncatchable on a play where he was held again? And they actually called it. You can call it a makeup or not. They were, if they didn't throw that one, I would be in Birmingham right now. But they're yelling uncatchable. So you got a touchdown after that. So just be quiet. No, what happened was Auburn had to convert a 4th and 11. Auburn wasted probably 2 or 3 more minutes. Auburn got the pass interference call a few minutes later, and then Malcolm Simmons ran it in to take the lead. So the leg to stand on that Oklahoma fans have, that they don't have to stand on, but the one they're trying to stand on is, oh, just shut up. You scored a little bit later, and it came because they called pass interference on Hutz on an uncatchable ball. It was uncatchable because the guy held him again, because he couldn't cover him. That's why it was uncatchable. Uncatchable is 10 feet over everybody's head, 10 feet out of bounds. Not a foot over his head, 3 feet behind him, because he was held and couldn't get there. Number three. That was number three. Egregious stupidity. Like, not just subjective stuff. The subjective stuff was obviously flipping the first thing. But I'm talking about, have you noticed I have not said anything about holding or not said anything about, you know, ticky-tack pass interference here and there where the guy's not just trying to tackle him so he doesn't score. Hadn't said anything about that. Not one time have I mentioned those calls where Oklahoma fans are like, you know, we got called for more penalties. Well, good. So you actually had less penalty yards than us, but whatever. So Auburn's up one. Mateer's got a drive with, you know, 8 minutes, 7 minutes, whatever to go. And he throws a ball up. The guy seemingly in the almost the exact same way as the other call, as the first call, catches, runs a step or two, kind of bobbling it, rolls over, the ball pops out. I'm just now, as I'm saying this, realizing it was the same play. Not the same play, but the same situation. He caught it. He stepped a few. He was kind of bobbling it as it went down his leg. He rolled over and the ball popped out. What they called the first time? They called incomplete pass. What they called this time? Catch. And guess what? That put him on like the 15. A few plays later, Mateer has his one running play of the game where he runs in. Give him the Heisman right now. So, you know, that's again, if that play happens in a normal game, you don't really have an argument. Yeah, you could say he caught it. You could say he took two steps, and yeah, that's all it needed. And he rolled over, and the ball came out, but he was already out of bounds. What is a catch? Everybody says that all the time now. What is a catch? I don't know why it's so difficult. You need one toe in the end zone. One toe, that's it. You need 2 feet in the NFL or 2 feet in college. No, 2 feet in the NFL, one in college in the inbounds. You got to take two steps or three steps. But if you hit the ground and then roll and it comes out, was that a fumble or did the ground cause it? It's all stupid. But the point is, again, if that play happens in any regular game, and that's the only questionable game of the day, you're not even really going to argue. You might go, oh man, he dropped it. That's about it. But when pretty much the exact same thing happened earlier in the game and you stole a touchdown from a team who's now up one, despite a 17-point swing, despite being put in a 17-point hole with incorrect officiating, not bad officiating, incorrect officiating. You put them in a 17-point hole. They got up 1 point after all of that, made up an 18-point deficit, basically, from incorrect officiating. And then you give the home team the benefit of the call that you took away from the one in the first quarter, from the away team. Same play, same call, same type of play. The only difference was when he rolled and the ball came out, he was out of bounds halfway, but he was already dropping it. But it didn't matter in the first half when he rolled and threw the ball up in the air and we got it. So, four mishaps there by the officials. I'll say at least three. The last one might have been the correct call, but that means the first one was the wrong call because it was the same thing. So, we'll say at least three, probably four incorrect officiating calls. Not ticky-tack, not you missed that hold. Blatant missing the rules. Not understanding, not going by your rules. Okay? So, that happened. It's over. Then, the response is, I tweeted this as well. There were hundreds, thousands of people on my timeline, every other person's timeline. I'm an Alabama fan, but Auburn got hosed. I'm a Georgia fan, but Auburn got hosed. I'm a Tennessee fan, but Auburn got hosed. All those three teams despise Auburn in every way, and Auburn could never do anything right, and their little brother, and blah, blah, blah. That's those people despise Auburn. They were probably still cheering when Mateer scored that game-winning touchdown. Probably cheering that. Yet, it was so bad, they went to a social media platform and had to let everybody know that I hate this team, but they got hosed. That should tell you how bad this is, how egregious it is. Now, of course, we'll flip to the tough guys. The tough guys that tell you good teams can if they're really good, if they're true good, they'll beat that bad officiating. It all evens out. You know, there's bad calls in every play. No, that's not what happened here. We've already been through it. Not what happened here. There's not bad calls in every play. They didn't take a touchdown away from Oklahoma because they put some subjective thought into a fumble. They didn't miss an illegal play by Auburn. They didn't miss Auburn tackling Oklahoma wide receiver to save a touchdown. They didn't miss all that. You can go back and forth with holding and all that all you want, but that's not what this is. You're not cool. Because you just get to say, no excuses. We just didn't finish. We had our chance. Yeah, Auburn had a chance. They were down 1 point or whatever. No, what was it? 5 points with 90 yards to go and took a bunch of sacks, even took the safety, whatever. The issue is all of those bad calls put Auburn in that situation. Auburn played the game they played. If the plays are called the correct way, they have a 14-point lead in that situation. Not a deficit where Oklahoma can pin their ears back and just go off. And if they complete a 30-yard pass, who cares? Auburn's got to work time clock management right there and all that kind of stuff. So they sent the house because they could. Because they had a lead and a 90-yard field to cover, to defend. If they are down, if Oklahoma's down like they should have been, they're in crunch mode and they're playing back and they're playing completely different defense. This isn't a normal game. This isn't a normal, the officiating equals out. This isn't that. Auburn had plenty of opportunities to do whatever. Don't give up, and I'm going to talk about sacks in a second, but don't give up all those sacks. Don't. You know, hold on to the ball, blah, blah, blah. Don't do this. Don't do that. Well, even with those things, they still had a 1-point lead. So, if the officials do their job, it's more than a 1-point lead. I know you can't put the, you know, chicken egg, cart before the horse and all that kind of crap. You never know what's going to happen. If Auburn scores that touchdown right there, you never know. Oklahoma, the next drive, might have thrown a bomb on the first play. You don't know. But over the course of the game, Auburn, after being taken, all these points taken away and given to the other team, was still winning the game. So this idea that Auburn didn't do enough to override the bad calls, that does not apply in this game. Sorry. I don't care what you think about other games from last season or Hugh Freeze not being able to finish or step on somebody's throat or we ain't got that dog in us. We can't finish. All that stupid crap to make you feel like a big dog. That does not apply to this situation. This was not Auburn finishing, not finishing. Yes, Auburn could have driven 90 yards after the other team had just scored the game-winning or the go-ahead touchdown after feeling relief of almost in almost every drive of being given a gift and still being down. So they finally take the lead. Oh, yes, we won. Now Auburn's in the back of the on their end of the field. Let's pin our ears back and go. Yeah, Auburn could have done that. But when you have been taking it away, when it's been taken away the entire game, you can't say Auburn didn't do enough. Just ask yourself that. That's a simple question. If those calls are called correctly and Auburn has a one-point lead, how can you say they didn't do enough? How can you say that? There's no way. It'd be different if they were down 30 from those calls, from those plays or whatever you want to say. But they obviously did enough to have a lead despite those things. So Auburn did do enough. They did not convert a four-minute drive from the 10-yard line. Nope. Dang. All that other stuff just goes away. That's the other thing. You got people complaining about officials the whole game on their Twitter feed and whatever, saying Auburn's being cheated. But then it gets down to the last drive. I tweeted this as well. You get down to the last drive, and because Auburn didn't go 90 yards, they suck. They just didn't get it done today. What happened to all the game-changing calls you were complaining about earlier? We don't just get to go, all right, here it sets up the last 5 minutes. Everything before doesn't matter. Auburn's got a one-point lead. That's all that matters. No, that's not all that matters. 60-minute game. You're not tough. You're not cool. You don't look like you know what you're talking about just because you all of a sudden flip and go, I'm tired of losing this way. Auburn didn't lose a way that you're tired of. Auburn lost in a different way. Auburn had 17 points taken away and still had a lead. So this game, it's over. It's over. Playoffs have made it to where you can lose 18 games now and still make it to them. This will be held differently. If Auburn loses one more game the rest of the way, they will make the playoffs. If Auburn loses two more games the rest of the way, I think at this point, real three-win teams could still make the playoffs. High-level SEC teams can make the playoffs. They will look at this game as, I mean, they should. They might not because it's week four and there's eight more weeks left or whatever, and they may have forgotten, but it needs to be brought up, and I think it will be by somebody smart, that they were pretty much screwed. I mean, you don't see the reaction by the national media, by the national guys that you know, have called Auburn a laughing stock for the last 3 or 4 years that love to crap on Auburn. Dude from Barstool, the Mississippi State guy that despises Auburn and Hugh Freeze, he even said Auburn got absolutely screwed. Like, this wasn't like one bad call at the end of the game. This wasn't like Notre Dame, Texas A&M, where they say a guy got held on the touchdown play. This was not knowing the rules throughout the game. Almost one situation per quarter. I think the first was in the first quarter. The second was in the second. Maybe the last two were both in the third. No, the last two were both in the fourth. Just, this is not knowing rules. And guess what? We don't get to hear from those guys who missed the call. We don't get an apology. We don't get anything because we act like the officials are God and they are untouchable. I understand why. I get it a little bit. Almost every rule that you don't understand in life, in everything, is because some idiot took advantage of a situation or some idiot ruined it for everybody. Like, maybe back in the day you could get on an official, but somebody probably killed an official at one point back in the 1920s, and they basically just said, all right, these guys are on and off the field. We're going to have a police escort. We're not going to know their names. We're not going to know anything about them, blah, blah, blah. And so that's probably what happened. But this protection of people, that, again, Hugh said this week, they affect jobs, thousands, millions of dollars. But, you know, if a guy gets fired, surprisingly, nobody's really going, oh, Hugh's on the hot seat after this one. Like, I'm very surprised at that, because they all week was whoever loses this game is on the hot seat. Because last year there was some, you know, negativity and things weren't awesome. So this year, if you lose this one game in week four, you're back on the hot seat, bud. So it's over. It's Texas A&M. But first, let's talk about the AP poll. Switching over to it real quick. Again, officiating an AP poll. Two things that people love to act like don't matter, that all of a sudden this year people realize they matter. I said this before the game was, maybe not before the game was over, but right after the game, before the poll was out, that Oklahoma, who was 11, Auburn was 22 in last week's AP poll. I said Oklahoma is going to jump up into the top 10 for beating Auburn with fake touchdowns. An Auburn team they were favored to beat by a touchdown. An Auburn team that was ranked below them. And they were at home. So they're going to jump into the top 10. And Auburn lost to a team that was favored to beat them by a touchdown. How much they lose by? A touchdown. They were on the road, and they had all those calls against them. And I said, Auburn's going to drop out. And they did. They're 26. But they're below Notre Dame, who's 22, who had the week off and went up two spots with a 1-2 record. Yes, Notre Dame has lost to who? Texas A&M and Miami, who are both in the top 10. I get it. I get it a little bit. They're up there. If we had no preseason poll, they wouldn't be ranked. But because they started in the top 10, they've got to be ranked still. But the egregious part was they did not play this week. They're still 1-2, and they jumped from 24 to 22. I love the AP poll. Illinois was, I think they were like 12, somewhere in that realm. No, they were 9. Lost to Indiana by 53 points. If you lose to Indiana by 53 points, I don't care what year it is in football. I don't care what year it is. I don't care where it was played. I don't care if you had the officials from the Oklahoma game. If you lose to Indiana by 53 points, you should be forced to not have a football team for at least 3 years. Guess what? Still ranked. Ranked 23rd. Dropped 14 spots, I believe. It was either 11 or 14. I can't remember. Still ranked. Then you got Michigan, who played the same Oklahoma we did. Lost by, I think it was 9, 10. Just looks sloppy, boring. Who cares? Yep, still in there. They moved up. We've got Ohio State. Sure, fine. Miami, I guess we won't. It to be 1996. Penn State, yep, we want it to be 1996. LSU's fourth. LSU does not have a impressive win at all, ever, yet. They beat Florida by 10. They beat Clemson by a touchdown or three. Clemson's obviously not good at all. They're 1-3, I believe. 1-2 or 1-3. But, you know, they got the names. They got those logos we've seen forever. Oh, look, we got Florida State in there at number 8. We got them all in there. Top 10 teams are all the teams you would see on the cover of a college football game in 1996. And then we drop down Indiana, Texas Tech, Ole Miss, Iowa State. Didn't Iowa State barely beat Kansas State in week one? Isn't Kansas State like 1-3? Let's see. Let me just look real quick. I'm going to do a quick Google search as I'm talking. Kansas State is 16th in the Big 12. 1-3. They're 1-3. Iowa State beat them 29. No, that was last year. Oh, 24-21. So Iowa State beat Kansas State. The only team they've played half decent, really. I mean, Iowa State did beat Iowa 16-13. So excuse me. But then they followed that up with a 24-16 win over the Red Wolves of Arkansas State. Put it on them, Cyclones. 8-point win over the Red Wolves of Arkansas State. I'm so glad Iowa State's got a top 15 spot. Man. So, you know, I'm enjoying the fruits of my 10 years of labor of being called an idiot and being told polls don't matter and all of that crap. And now we finally have people with bigger microphones than me saying the same thing I've said. Officials affect games. It's not always equal. They affect losses. You don't just get to forget those calls at the end of the game and say, we didn't finish. Oh, 10 sacks. I didn't talk about that yet. 10 sacks. You don't get to talk about officials with 10 sacks. Number one, the official stat now is 9 sacks, which is still wrong. I watched the ABC teleprompter, whatever you want to say it on the screen. It went from 1 to 2 when Jackson Arnold dropped back, ran up the middle, the white linebacker, because I got mad because he got knocked down, got back up and still made the tackle. But Jackson Arnold was across the line of scrimmage. They called it a sack. Quarterback runs, design quarterback runs are not sacks. That wasn't the sack anyway because he got past the line of scrimmage. So we get to tell Oklahoma they've got their top 10, or excuse me, season or program record sacks. So that nullifies all the terrible calls. They obviously destroyed Auburn in every way because they had 10 fake sacks. And we get to use that stat and say, officials don't matter when you got 10 sacks. Excuse me. With eight sacks, Auburn had a 1-point lead. They got 2 sacks at the end. Maybe just one. I don't know. So Auburn had a lead despite those sacks, you dummies. I wanted to say something worse. So, all right, AP poll, it affects things. People are now realizing it. I don't know why we still put it out. At worst, started in the 6th week. All righty, moving on. This is a big long show today. We're up 41 minutes already. Bruce Pearl kind of threw a major kink in things. And then, 2 takeaway from the... we knew for a week or two now that the SEC was going to release the permanent rivals for the football seasons for the next 4 years. So the thing is, everybody's going to have 3 permanent teams that they play for the next 4 years. At least 2 of those will probably stay the same. But even then, after every 4 years, they're going to reassess the records of those teams and maybe change even the permanent rivals every 4 years. Then otherwise, after that, the other 6 games are rotating. You will play 6 teams. Is this right? Yes. You'll play 6 teams 1 year. I was going to say it was 6 the other way. No, it's not. That's interesting. So there's really no rhyme or reason on that. But anyway, the 6 teams you will play home and away at least every 4 years. So if you stay at your school for 4 years, like everybody should, or 5, you will play every team home and away. And that's cool. I like that part. That is good. Because did y'all realize Georgia has never played at Texas A&M? They've been in the conference for 13 years. So they will, I think it, by the time they go, they will have been in the conference 15 years. And Georgia has never been to Texas A&M. Auburn hardly ever plays Florida. We rarely play Tennessee. There was a little stretch where we kind of played them a little bit. We still haven't played Texas. Not that that's a massive thing. But so we're going to have 3 teams. And if you're looking on YouTube, you can see the schedules for the next 4 years. But you're going to have 3 teams that you play every year. And then you rotate with the other 6. And every other year, you'll never play back-to-back the same. Like, we'll never go 2 Texas A&M 2 years in a row. But we will, at least in 4 years, you will do both. So I like that. But it is weird because next year we go 2 Texas A&M. Wait, again? I just realized that. Okay, now I got to complain about something else. Next year we go 2 Texas A&M again. Then we host Texas A&M in 2027. Then we don't play Texas A&M. And then we go to 2 Texas A&M in 2029. So I don't know. Those other 6 are weird. But I guess that doesn't make sense because there's 15 teams, that means you've got 12 spots to fill outside of your, every 2 years, to fill outside of your 3 regulars. right? 15, 12. So, yes, it should be the opposite. I don't know. For some reason, we play Texas A&M two years, the next 2 years, not 1 year, and then the next year. I guess it works out. I don't know. Anyway, so Auburn's obviously are Alabama, Georgia, and then Vandy. I thought it should have been Mississippi State just because we have some history with them. And they're doing this. They won't, I mean, they kind of say it, but they don't want to say it. They do this based off of your previous, I think they said 10 years. So, like, they're not going to give Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. They know Alabama and Auburn needs Alabama and Georgia. So, they're already two of the toughest teams, the two toughest, like, as a combo. You know, some idiot's going to argue that LSU, Florida's worse or whatever, but it's not. So, Alabama, Georgia, and then we've got Vandy. I get it a little bit. I think they didn't give us Mississippi State because then they would have had Auburn, Alabama, and Ole Miss. Yeah, they've got Alabama and Ole Miss. So Auburn, Alabama, Ole Miss, that'd be tough for Mississippi State. So they had to give us Vandy. Obviously, Vandy's been decent the last 2 years because of Pavia. I'm not worried about him once he's gone, honestly. I don't care what their coach is building. It doesn't make – whatever. So at least for the next 4 years, we get to go to Vanderbilt twice, which means I might get to go to Nashville because I never get to go for some reason. So the only egregious stupidity – I've said egregious a lot. The stupid part of this is 2028, we go to Alabama, to Georgia, to Florida, to LSU, to Arkansas. We get Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Vandy at home. It's not an awful slate. It used to be that way anyway. We would get Ole Miss and Mississippi State at home 1 year, and I guess we'd get Alabama, Georgia at home the next year. Again, this was a chance for Greg Sankey. I know he doesn't sit here and meticulously make the schedules, but he has the last say. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who appears to just not like Auburn, despite being from Auburn, New York. He could have fixed the Alabama-Georgia rotation. You'll notice we've got Alabama and Georgia away, both, and next year we've got them at home. People under 15 years old think that's good for some reason, that we get Alabama and Georgia at home. That's fine. But guess what? Next year we got to go to both. And it used to be we would go to both either back-to-back or two of the last 3 weeks. And then Gus said, well, if you're going to make us do that, please move the Georgia game up. So that's why Georgia's middle of the season now, fifth or sixth game, which I don't like. I know things change. I know we don't get to keep everything from our childhood. But Georgia and Alabama at the end of the year, amen corner, Pat Dye, whether it was Georgia, Alabama, or Georgia, Louisiana, Monroe, Alabama, that's what it should be. And it shouldn't be because, again, I argued this back then, and this is still part of this argument. Auburn has two of the hardest rivals most of the time. Georgia is only recently really good. I mean, they've always been mediocre. They've never really just been disgustingly terrible. But when I was growing up, yes, they'd beat us some, and they would be middle of the road, maybe top percentile, top half, but they were never what they are now. But right now, you've got Auburn going to their rivals. It's not just like they're going to play Ohio State 1 year. Like, that's a big deal. I get it. But your rivals, the ones you want to beat the most, the ones that want to beat you the most, you've got to go to Alabama and to Georgia every other year. That should not happen. And it's made a little bit better because it's split up in the season, middle of the season, Georgia, end of the season, Alabama. But even then, that's not real. That's not Auburn football to me. Sorry. And the Georgia game needs more build up than the middle. I don't care that Georgia and Tennessee play each other early and all that. And for some reason in the Big 12, Texas and Texas A&M always played each other early. That's not what it is. Auburn and Opelika play each other the third game of the year this year. Why are we doing that? Why did we decide to play when we're not even good yet? Everybody's not the best they could be by the end of the season. I want to play at the end of the year, build it up, and be the best we can be. Yes, you got more chances for injuries, but early in the season, you're still trying to figure stuff out. Even the good teams, even Alabama, even they're not good, but even Ohio State, they're still figuring things out. Put the big games you need to win at the end of the season. But Greg Sankey could have used this time because obviously it's all screwed up. We're about to play Texas A&M on the road back-to-back. And so what they did in 2022, y'all don't realize this. In 2012, some of you don't. Texas A&M and Missouri got added to the SEC. They claimed adding that screwed everybody's schedules up. So in 2012 and 2013, Georgia played at Auburn. So 2013, when Auburn did the prayer at Jordan-Hare, that was the second year in a row Georgia played at Auburn. And the I don't know exact. They didn't go into details of exactly why that had to happen. But all it was told was, well, when you added these other teams and we want to keep these rivals, we had to move people around, and it just messed that up. So since 2012, 2013, we have played Alabama and Georgia at home together or on the road together. This obviously blows all that up. We've got Texas A&M twice in a row at on the road. This obviously blows all that up. So we can blow up the Georgia thing. We can put Georgia, we can play Georgia on the road 2 years in a row. I'll allow it. I'll allow it. If it gets the rotation back, and that happens all the time. We played South Carolina on the road 2 years in a row. Bo Nix's last year at Auburn and TJ Finley. I went to the second one. We played them 2 years in a row at home. COVID and all that stuff blew it all up. So I don't know why we can't fix that. That has to be a discussion, and it has to be ignored every time. You got two of the biggest rivalries in college football history. Auburn, Alabama's number one. Auburn, Georgia's top 10. If you want to count USC and Notre Dame as something for some reason. But that has to be fixed. It's not, and people aren't going to like this, not fair. Georgia and Alabama. Alabama doesn't play Georgia and Auburn on the road every other year. I think they are this year in the game this week. Yeah, Auburn, Alabama, Georgia this week at Georgia. They come to Alabama. They come to Auburn. That happens this year, but it's not every other year. And I know you like it on the odd years where we get both at home. But sorry, that's just that it's not. Auburn has two of the toughest rivals, the biggest rivals in sports. They shouldn't have to go to both of the road. All right, I'm done with that. But yeah, 2028, we get to go LSU, Florida, Arkansas, Georgia, Alabama on the road. Appreciate it, Greg. All right. Also, next year, our opponents are Baylor in game one, Southern Miss in game two. Then it'll be SEC and a bye. This is not on the screen if you're asking me to look, but Southern Miss week two, SEC or bye week three, then Jacksonville State, and then it's SEC or bye the whole way after that. So, as I said a little bit earlier, Bruce Pearl threw a kink in things. The first day of practice, he announced that he was going to retire. Shortly after, they said Stephen was going to take over as head coach this year. And then shortly after that, they said they gave him a 5-year deal. So, I kind of knew this was going to happen soon. Not like I knew information. I just felt it like last year, even though we went to the Final Four and probably had the best team we've ever had overall. I just kind of got that sense. Like he just wasn't 1,000% into it like he used to be. I kind of took it as he's just older and calmer now. And he's still the same guy, still wants to win, still going to recruit, all that, knows how to call plays. But he's just kind of an older guy. But I just kind of felt like it was coming in the next year or so. And then somebody, one of the podcasts or so-and-so, asked him, how long is he going to coach? And he said, not that long, not that much more, or something like that. So I just kind of got it in my head that it's going to happen soon. And to be flat out honest with you, I'm in football mode right now. I do care about the basketball season. I want us to be good, but I'm just not worried about basketball right now. And if we can go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and not have to think about this for the next 2 years, I'm sort of fine with it. Now, the next part of that is, who's going to be the next guy? And I've said for years, you know, when a coach goes away, which we haven't had many coaches retire, you don't see that a lot. But when a coach goes away, you kind of get a little excited because then you're like, oh, well, who can we get? We need to get this guy. Like, yes, you wish we still had Bruce, for sure. But then you're like, well, who can we get? Like, it'd be exciting. Let's go get this guy. Let's whatever. And so in my brain, I was always kind of like, but they're probably going to give it to Steven. And not that that's boring. Not at all. But it's still not like that excitement of the coaching search and all that. So nothing against Steven. It was just, I've always kind of been that way. Like when people fire a coach and just hire the offensive coordinator, which I know they kind of did that with Gus, but it was not there anymore. That's just always a little bit boring to me. I know my boredom doesn't matter to what's best for Auburn sports, but whatever. So when it was announced it was Steven, I actually kind of changed my tune, especially when he gave his press conference yesterday, which you can see on boardwoggle.com, see or read. It's very much, and that the big thing you have to worry about when a new coach comes in is losing players and like, what's our system going to be? It's going to take 2 years to build. We don't really have to do that. I mean, yes, players want to come play for Bruce. And maybe, you know, they want to come play for Ira Bowman or whoever, and or Steven. But we might lose that aspect a little bit. But Bruce is still going to be around. He's going to be like Saban, probably even more, hovering around, still selling the university, going to be at practices, probably can go to do recruiting things. I don't know. But as far as the system, as far as how we're going to do things, it should be the same. Like, same staff, hopefully the same staff stays, hopefully all the players stay, same staff, everything. So it should just be a continuation of what we had before without Bruce looking like he's going to vomit on the floor from screaming so much. And Steven did say he's not going to be that demonstrative, but if you've watched him before, he's gotten pretty mad on the court. He's screamed a lot. He's probably going to be a little shy for a little bit and try to look more professional and all that. But, you know, Todd Golden was that way, and now Todd Golden's hurling expletives at players on the court during the games. So I'm fine with it. Again, if this was like, I know you couldn't do this in the middle of the season, but if this was like November and I was, or December and I was 1,000% into basketball season, I might care a little bit more or whatever. I do care, but it's still kind of, it's what, 41 days away, I think, or 40 days away till basketball games start, which is pretty close, but I'm still just kind of like, you know, I it's not going to hit me, I guess. And the fact that he's, that Bruce is going to still be around, it's not bothering me that too much. I just don't think there's going to be that much of a change as long as we keep coaches, as long as we keep players. Now you had people that were mad about it because he waited till the first day. And of course that put Auburn in a bind because then they had to hire his son. No, they could have hired Ira Bowman. They could have moved up anybody. The fact of the matter is, and John Cohen said this, he's been talking about this for years. Like, Bruce brought it up years ago that he wasn't going to coach much longer. And there's 1,000 reasons for that. He's very into, you know, humanity. I'll just say that. And very into that now. And, you know, you get older, you get grandkids, you might not care too much about 19-year-old basketball as much. Sure, he does. But, you know, you get older and you change and you want to chill and maybe just watch some basketball. He wasn't forced out, like some guy said, at all. There's no reason he would be forced out. Humanity. Bruce cares about humanity. So, yeah, I mean, it's, again, if it was football, basketball season, I might hit this a little bit harder, but as of right now, as you see on Facebook, or excuse me, as you see on YouTube stream right now, Bruce is shaking Steven's hand. He's just basically like, hey, just keep it going. And of course, he's going to want Steven to do his things his way, and Steven's probably going to have things he wants to do his way. But he has learned from one of the best in Auburn history, so I don't see a massive need to change. You hear him talk, and it sounds like Bruce. He definitely knows what he's talking about. It's all he's done since he's graduated college, and he played college basketball, and he's been around Bruce forever. So, as he said yesterday, he's been around Bruce since day one, literally. So, Oklahoma game is stupid. AP poll is stupid. Auburn's Alabama-Georgia schedule is stupid. Bruce Pearl is not stupid. There we go. All right, we're right at an hour. All right, I'm going to continue to try to do these each week. I'm trying. What we got? We got Texas A&M. Didn't even talk about Texas A&M at all. Going to Texas A&M, whatever. They're not. It's not going to be as tough as Oklahoma. They got a week off. That worries me a little bit. But they're on Twitter. They're all worried that now a mad Auburn is going to come take over, and the officials are going to give Auburn calls because Auburn didn't get the calls last week. So we'll see. That's where I am kind of with previewing games now. We'll see. But what do we have? We have Texas A&M, then a bye, then Georgia. So, yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it. This has been Warbloggle Podcast number 27. War Eagle.